Welcome to Culture Voice, an international perspective on the marketing of arts and culture, in partnership with the National Arts Marketing Project of the U.S. and the Arts Marketing Association of the U.K. And now, your hosts, Carol Jones and Ron Evans.
Hello and welcome to Culture Voice, a podcast exploring international perspectives on the marketing of arts and culture in both the UK and the US. Everyone, my name is Ron Evans. I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Carol Jones, over in the UK. Carol, how are you today?
I'm really well, Ron. How about you?
I'm doing great. We've had a lot of rain here in California. As you know, we've had a drought, and we've had a mighty river flowing in front of our house now for a couple of weeks, which is great. And we filled up a lot of the reservoirs, so we're doing very good on the rain, which I'm sure is something that you are well familiar with over there.
It's very wet and windy here in Cardiff.
I can only imagine. It's even more north. We are happy to have a special guest on this podcast. We have Kath Hume, the wonderful Kath Hume, who I've worked with in many other conferences and awesome activities, who is the new CEO of the Arts Marketing Association, the organization that is partially behind this podcast. And Kath, you started at the beginning of the year. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Hi, Ron. Hi, Carol. Thanks for letting me join your wonderful podcast. But yeah, I started on the 4th of January, but it's going really well so far. Thank you.
We're so glad to have you, and thank you for taking a few minutes out of your busy day getting up to speed on all the new things. And you've been with AMA for years before this in your previous position at the head of programs. So you certainly have a lot of experience with the organization. And how cool is that, that we could take that experience and now you are moved into the head position and are running things. How did you get started? I mean, I always like to ask people where they started in the arts, what their background is, how they like to express themselves creatively. What's the story of Kath before today?
Yeah, so I've kind of got that typical story of through childhood, kind of just having a natural affinity with the art and cultural sector, and that being really encouraged by my family. I was actually watching a video of when James Corden hosted, I now can't remember the name of the award ceremony he hosted, but it was kind of the Tony Award, Tony Awards. Mm-hmm. And I was watching that the other day, and he does this great opening skit, and they have this song about, and I don't know if this is taken from a musical or written specifically for this, but he has this whole song about kind of being in a theatre and seeing people up there and thinking, like, that's where I belong. Maybe that's where I am. Mm. So I kind of had that experience, and that developed. I kind of really developed alongside that an interest in learning. So my first kind of professional experiences in the sector were working in theatre and education. So working, devising performances to take into schools and to work with young people to encourage in them a love of the arts, but also to kind of bring the curriculum to life. So that's kind of where I started. And those two things, learning and arts and cultural sector, have kind of been the two parts of my career that have followed through throughout from those early stages.
And have you been on stage as well, or backstage, or from a programming perspective?
A long time ago, I was on stage. A long time ago, but I think it was better for everyone that I stepped off it.
Oh, stop
and,
now.
and supported the sector in a different way. So yeah, I mean, I love performing, but I love it more than the people that I'm performing to love it, and that's fine. I'm happy with that. I've made peace with that.
Excellent. Well, this is, you know, it's always interesting to hear how someone's background has led them to where they are. And the AMA is doing so many wonderful things in the sector. And, you know, here I am in the U.S. We have our Americans for the Arts, which is a similar organization. It's not quite the same thing. But what an organization like that can do for the community is massive. And there's a couple of programs. We've talked a little bit about the Digital Marketing Academy on previous podcasts, but I would love it if you and Carol could maybe talk a little bit about the new program that you're starting, or that I believe you have started, that follows the Digital Marketing Academy model, but it's the Audience Diversity Academy. Tell us a little bit about that and how that works and what the goals are.
Yeah, so the model of the Digital Marketing Academy works so brilliantly, having international mentors and it all being online. So there's kind of that. And one of the things that the AMA is really passionate about is seeing a change in our sector in terms of diversity. So diversity of people working within the sector and diversity of audiences engaging with the sector. And when we talk about diversity, we mean it in its broadest terms. So those two things kind of came together to create the Audience Diversity Academy. And the aim of that and the goal of that is to work with individuals in organisations who are looking at how the place that they can work can engage a more diverse group of audiences. Mm. So that's kind of the premise of it. And Carol on board as our kind of original DMA-er. And I think we're getting there. I think we're seeing that this change is happening for organisations. Carol, would you concur? Would you agree with that?
I think we're seeing the start of a real culture shift.
Is that the name of a new podcast, Culture Shift?
It could be. Maybe I like it. Maybe we should have put this one there. But it's really making an impact on organisations, or beginning to. There's a start of a sea change. One of the things from the model of the Digital Marketing Academy that the new Audience Diversity Academy has taken on board is this idea of agile. And that is quite challenging in terms of diversity. So how can you be agile, but at the same time, you don't want to be parachuting in or landing like a spaceship and then, you know, disappearing again. So that's one of the things that's been fascinating for me with the Audience Diversity Academy, how people can take on this really big idea of working in an agile way, but at the same time have that integrity of creating much longer term relationships.
Because we know that audience development and diversifying your audience is a long term project. It's not something that you can just dip in and out of. So what we needed to look at in the program this time is what, starting with the organizations and the individuals that we were bringing into it, we felt that they needed to already be some way on this journey so that we could better galvanize and mentor and help them move forward, perhaps work through some blockages that they were experiencing and help them unpick why that is and do that in an agile way. Because, you know, with digital marketing, you're kind of working with tools and channels and ultimately you're reaching audiences, but those tools and channels, if you're experimenting with them, that's fine. But the idea of experimenting with people, that's not so fine. So we had to look at what is it within diversity and within audience development that we could apply thinking in an agile way to. And I think we've kind of worked out some of the ways that we can do that.
Well, I'd love to jump in. I know that agile has come up in several other conversations. People are talking about it at conferences. But there may be some folks on the podcast that don't know what that means. Carol, could you give us a definition of agile? And then I would love, Kath, for you to maybe give us a real life example of, you can change the name of the organization if you need to, but what's one of the experiments? What's one of the challenges? Who they're trying to reach, and how might the ADA be able to deal with that? So Carol, give us a little breakdown on agile. Agile thinking, what does that mean, and how is that coming to play here?
I'm going to do what the lovely Sarah Devine, who works at Brooklyn Museum, describes as a loosey-goosey description of agile. And I think what we're doing in both the academies is reshaping what agile means. Agile comes from the startup tech industry. So I think 17 people got together in a room and came up with this Agile manifesto. And that was mainly around issues that had arisen with their clients testing software. So whatever they did, there were always issues. How could they get around that? How could they make it more cost effective? How could they make it more customer focused? So the key things that the academies are trying to do here is to get people to really start thinking about constant iteration. So testing, learning, testing again, but also involving the audience at every stage of that. Those are the two big things that are key.
That's a great breakdown. I always kind of look at it like maybe the previous way of writing a book would be that you would plan out all of your chapters in advance. You'd outline it all. You'd break everything down. You'd figure out what all your resources were going to be, and all your citations, and then you would start writing from the beginning to the end. And I look at Agile as, let's just start writing. And as we go, we will find the things along the way that will form the book, so that it's much more up to date with what's going on in the world right now, rather than where we thought it was going to be when we started writing the book a year ago or something like that. Would that kind of fit in with Agile from your perspective?
Absolutely. You still need a plan. And anybody who tells you you don't need to plan if you're working in an agile way, well, you know, alarm bells should sound and you should think quite quickly that that's not the right way to go. But it's a different way of planning. It can be very challenging, and the fellows on the academy find it challenging that you might have an end goal, but actually you're not sure how you're going to get there. And how you're going to get there can change quite radically from start to the finish. In traditional Agile, people work in 6-week sprints. But of course, that doesn't necessarily work as well in our sector, particularly in a sector like museums and heritage, where a year can be a sprint, let alone 6 weeks.
Kath, maybe you can give us an example of an organization that maybe they came to AMA, to this program, or even if you can hypothesize something, what sort of problem would somebody be trying to solve in a process like this? And how would they know if they solved it? How would they measure that? What's a real-life case study?
So I think there's a lot of challenges that people come to the Audience Diversity Academy wanting to address. Some of those are things like, we're opening a new centre in an area that doesn't have a typical base of arts attenders. So how do we engage with this community and make what we're doing feel embedded in that place and really engage with that community, not just kind of bring people from outside that area? Some organisations came with specific audiences that they wanted to target, specific audience groups. So maybe that was people who are deaf and hard of hearing, whatever the protected characteristic that they kind of felt like that was a group that they were equipped to engage with, but didn't really know how to start. Some people came with strategic challenges within their organization. So how do I, as someone working in learning and outreach, for example, I'm doing this great work, but how do I get my organization to embed it in what they are doing? So they're kind of different levels of and different types of challenge that people were coming with. So the Audience Diversity Academy is about thinking around those challenges and how can we experiment and what experiments could we do to try stuff out and see what's going to unlock this challenge for us. So some of that is as simple as contacting local community centres and saying, you know, I'm from this organization, I would like to come and work with you, I'd like to come and volunteer in your center and get to know you and the people that you are engaging with, so that I can understand them and start thinking about how they might engage with us as an organization. So some of the stuff is that simple, about thinking creatively about how to go and start building relationships. And then other people are kind of trying things out internally, whether that's an internal discussion group or kind of trying to put together a cross-departmental team, break down some silos, see if that works. So there's a whole, there's a really big range of things that people are trying, from creating videos to just put out wanting to reach new people. There's a lot of stuff that's going on, and you can find blogs about it. Each of our fellows and our mentors as well blog about the program, and that's on the AMA website, so you can actually see those case studies emerging on that space.
Kath, you mentioned the term protected characteristics. That might be something that in the States they won't have come across.
So that's, is it Arts Council England that created that term? I don't know, but that's what's in my head. But protected characteristics are a way of, it's kind of a list of characteristics that people might have. That mean that they are more likely to be disadvantaged in some way or to experience discrimination. And those protected characteristics, I'm not going to get them all now, but they include things like ethnicity, gender, sexuality, disability. They also include things like pregnancy. They include, what else have I forgotten? Carol, what have I forgotten?
Well, the key thing, I think, I'm sure the Arts Council of England would be happy to take ownership of protected characteristics. But of course, it's the comes from the equality legislation that has recently, not recently, a few years ago, been passed.
Yeah, so this is sort of a traditional definition of diversity, that there are certain qualities that some people have that may identify them as being more disadvantaged and reaching out to them. Does it ever extend, like, for example, to someone that is completely not aware of a genre, for example? Not that there's anything that any accommodation that needs to be made for them, but just like moving the needle to, you know, someone that's never even been exposed to jazz, for example, versus our normal audience being people that have somewhat of a knowledge of jazz. I mean, we're kind of crossing into marketing a little bit in that case, but is it ever looked at, and would that be something that could fit into this as well, reaching out to an audience that is completely uninformed about a certain kind of genre, or does it work in the reverse? Let's say an artist wanted to participate in ADA and they wanted to make the world more knowledgeable about their specific cultural art form that really wasn't seen out in the world. People didn't know what it is. Would spreading the information about that and having people experience that type of art, would that fit into the same kind of conversation of diversity?
We haven't considered it like that, but it does remind me of a question that we had to consider along this journey, which is we wanted to engage a really broad range of organisations as fellows on this programme. And one of the questions we had was from a disability-led organisation who said, you know, we're really great at getting people who have physical disabilities to come and engage and be audience members. We're not so great at getting what you might term a mainstream audience to come. Is that something that could work on the program? And that was quite interesting because it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying in you know, you could relate it back to that.
Yeah.
So we haven't thought about what you were saying. And I think that we might find space for that in our other programs. Because ultimately what we are trying to do with the Audience Diversity Academy is reach audiences who aren't engaging with the art and and specifically diversify the audiences, the visitors, the people that we see engaging with the sector?
Yeah, it brings up the whole question of considering the other, but in reverse in that case, I think that was a perfect example that people who wouldn't normally go to a production that was built around performers with disabilities or something like that, bringing the mainstream public in to participate in that. I mean, I imagine, you know, there's nothing wrong with experiments around getting actors who are disabled in one way or another to participate on stage or to increase the diversity of one's casting in theater. I only threw out all of these ideas for the listeners as we're talking here because I think we have a traditional idea of what diversity is, and I think it could be expanded into other areas because generally you can break it down into considering people who are not being considered or having people consider those people who have never considered them before. And I think that could open it up pretty widely because there's nothing but good in any of those ideas, I think.
Yeah, and I'd like to pick up on that point about looking at the people within the organisation. And one of the things that we're doing at the AMA at the moment and that we'll be doing long term is that we are developing what we're calling a 360 diversity strategy. So that's for us as an organisation. And the reason it's a 360 strategy is because it doesn't just look at the people that are engaging with us. It looks at us as an organisation, us as a staff team, the board, our member reps who are kind of members that are advocates for us and engage with us. So we're looking at everything that we're doing. We're starting and kind of getting our own house in order. At one of our conferences, we had a great speaker, and one of the things that she said was, "You can't be about us without us," and that is one of the sort of things that has inspired us to be more to be perhaps bolder, but certainly to be more explicit about our ambitions in terms of the AMA as an organisation and the AMA as a diverse organisation. And that's something I'm really proud of, the work that we're doing. We have a lot of work to do, but that's exciting and may well be challenging along the way. But I kind of think that looking internally to model that is really important.
It's really great. I mean, from a marketing perspective, I've seen a lot of people start cluing into this, and I would imagine there's many other people that would say, why are you just cluing into this now? But I see people looking at brochures of performers on a brochure and realizing that everybody on there is white. Or websites that website designers are starting to think about that. I mean, they should have been thinking about this for a long time. But in my sphere, I see these conversations happening, which I think is a really good thing, especially as organizations are trying to reach out to wider audiences. Those audiences, the research says they'd like to see some people that look like them participating in these things and feeling like that's welcome. It's interesting. A friend of mine told me yesterday, she works for a theater, and she was in the box office area, and there was a knock on the glass. And she looked out, and there was a gentleman standing there. And she opened the door and asked him if she could help him. And he didn't speak English very well. He spoke Spanish only. And he tried to make her understand that he wanted to come to the theater because he thought it would be a good way for him to work on his English. And once he got that across to her, she told me she just lit up. She said, that's kind of what we're here for. That is exactly our mission. And so she was explaining that the current play was kind of a fast-talking play. It might be a little bit hard, but one of the next plays that was coming up was something that he was really interested in and that he already knew the story of. And so she sent him away with materials for that, and he said he was going to come back. So it's the outreach like that, too, that I think is really, really powerful here. And I think we forget about it sometimes because we get bogged down in the day-to-day. But the work that AMA is doing to have people even think about those conversations to a greater degree is just fabulous. It's on a higher plane of Maslow's hierarchy here, and I think it's really important.
One of the great projects that has come out of this first Audience Diversity Academy is some work by one of the fellows, James Thomas, at Hackney Music. And they were looking to increase the number of children taking part in out-of-school music provision, particularly those at the lowest end of the socioeconomic scale. So they were reaching those people in school, but they then weren't reaching them out of school. And they've done some great work in partnership with jazz festivals and orchestras in their area. And one of the key things, it's really interesting that you mentioned this, Ron, was to make sure that what they did included tutors and people who reflected that group at the lowest end of the socioeconomic scale, so that they could see mentors working through that project that looked like them, that they could relate to.
Carol, I agree with you. That's really important. Well, I want to thank both of you. This has been a great conversation talking about diversity here and AMA and getting to know Kath, you a little bit more in your new position. A great opportunity to talk more about these things in detail over coffee, tea, or whatever drink of your choice you'd like would be to go to the Arts Marketing Association conference, which is happening when and where this year, Kath?
It's happening from the 25th to the 27th of July in Belfast. Yeah, which is really exciting for us. It's such a great city, and we haven't had our conference there for some time, and we're looking forward to bringing our usual mix of speakers from the UK and internationally, but also we can really kind of draw out all the great work that's happening in Northern Ireland by being there. We can really engage with the art sector there.
It's one of the nice things about the conference moving around is you get a nice dose of what is happening in the city that the conference is being hosted in, too. I've always loved that. Now, what's the title of the conference? What's the topic this year?
So this year, the title is The Value of Everything. And we are talking about you in terms of not in monetary value, so that I'm sure we'll come into it, but in terms of what might work for you, your organization, your audiences. So we're thinking about, there are so many trends in terms of audience trends, marketing trends, technological trends that we need to think about, or that we feel we need to think about as marketers, as fundraisers, as people engaging with audiences. And the conference is going to look at some of these emerging trends. So we might think about the trust economy. We might look at emerging business models. And we're going to encourage delegates to kind of come quite open-minded, be ready to hear these new ideas and think about what is going to work for your organization and for you and to help you reach your goals. But we also want to really, within that mix, think about what is it that we want to hang on to, which bits of our practice individually and collectively are really working and really helping us achieve what we want in terms of audience goals, whether that's more audiences, more income, different audiences, whatever it might be. So the conference is all about kind of looking at these emerging trends and what we can learn from them, hearing ideas and case studies from people working in the sector and outside the sector, and also looking at what is it that we're doing really well that we can share with other people at the conference and that we want to make sure we hang on to and hold on to while we move forward and embrace the newer things that are happening around us.
Wow, Kath, that's a great breakdown of the conference. You've sold me. I've been to the conference before, and it is fantastic. It's so great to get together with other people that are into the same things that you're into and get all geeky about the arts and the value that they bring to people. I'm going to pause the podcast for just a second. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hello everyone, this is Mel Larson and you are listening to Culture Voice.
All right, everyone, we're back and we are moving on to the final part of the podcast where we share some sort of a resource, a tool, something that's going to make your life a little bit better or easier as an arts marketing person out there. Kath, why don't you start us off? You have a resource or a tool for us today?
I do. It's a video, and it's a video from an event called Power Through Diversity that Arts Council England funded. And it's a video of an artist whose name is Mawan Rizwan, so that's Mawanrizwan, for anyone who's going to go and Google it. And he, it's just a really great, fun video that kind of cuts to the core of some of the issues around diversity. And so I'd recommend people to go and have a look at that, and it'll get you thinking.
Sounds great. And we will put the link to that in the podcast notes so people can just click on it and watch it and include that right in there. Great, great recommendations, Kath. See? It's awesome having you here. Carol, how about you? What resource do you have for us today?
Well, this is for listeners mainly in the States, I think. It's an online journal called Arts Professional, which listeners on this side of the pond will be familiar with. You can find it at artsprofessional.co.uk. There's lots of news and features about things happening across the UK in it, but a lot of them will be relevant, whichever side of the pond you're based in. So, for instance, they've just posted a case study on the work the National Gallery has been doing using Facebook Live to host online tours and how they're using that to communicate with a global digital audience. Just go to the website and sign up. It's free. I've got two, though, just like Cass. The other one is if you're interested in the latest figures about how people use their mobile phones, and I know you'll be interested in this, Ron, the Flurry Analytics blog has got a great report with those latest figures, and you can find that at flurrymobile.tumblr.com.
Perfect. Yeah, I will definitely go and check that out. We run a longitudinal study on that since 2009. Every 3 years, we check back in with thousands of people across the U.S. So always curious to see, especially in another country, what's going on. I have, as everyone listening to this knows, there's a lot of difficult political things going on around the world. Doesn't matter what side you're on, you're probably not getting what you want. And it is taking a toll. It can take a toll on you on a day-to-day basis and kind of wear you down. This is an article that I found on Medium. It's called How to Stay Outraged Without Losing Your Mind. And it's really a practical way of self-care in an environment where we have so many things bombarding us from the news that is causing us to think off of our missions, off of our relationships around us, off of the sphere of influence that we actually have around us, right? I can't change all the things happening everywhere else in the world, but I do have the power to change what's right around me or to make it better. And this article touches on that and talks about really taking care of yourself in a time when it is easy to be emotionally distracted with many other things in the world. And if we can take care of ourselves better, we're going to be doing our missions more effectively and reaching out, teaching people the value of the arts and having them escape that for a little while and coming and spending some time with us. So I'll put the link to that in the show notes as well. We have a huge group of resources this time around. It's fantastic. Carol, we should probably get going here, being at our time on the podcast. Kath, thank you so much for stopping in, sharing some background information about you and where you'd like to be focusing on AMA. It's so fantastic to have you here.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And Carol, as always, wonderful. Next time, I'll have you run the podcast. I'm run it this time, you run it next time. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Stay outraged. I love the name of your resource recommendation.
Awesome. And that's the episode, folks. We'll catch you next time as we discuss always relevant issues in the world of marketing, arts, and culture in from an international perspective. Stay cool, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to Culture Voice. If you like this episode, Subscribe and stay connected to the latest conversations on the marketing of arts and culture.